In Practice, Isabel Mallett is an exhibition at Sculpture Center in Long Island City, New York. The exhibition is entered through a doorway in the corner of a long white wall in the main exhibition space. We pass from a large, bright, daylit room with very high ceilings into a smaller, lower, shadowy space. The room is about 20 feet wide by 40 feet long. The floor is concrete. The walls are drywall painted white, and the ceiling, 10 feet above the ground, is solid steel sheathing supported by I-beams. There are three circles of light on the floor, turning on and off in a seemingly random pattern. The rhythm is slow and irregular. On, off, on, off, on, off, etc. The gap between the light can and the ground is about 2 feet. The light cans are metal cylinders sprayed either black or white, around 5 inches diameter and 8 inches tall. There are colored wires spilling out of holes in the side of the cans, some connecting to a light sensor pointing into the room. The artist has borrowed broken light cans from the gallery and rewired each gallery light to hold an LED panel attached to a photocell sensor. These lights are normally used outside buildings or in public spaces. They turn on when the sun goes down in the evening and turn off when the sun comes up in the morning. Installed in this room with no daylight, the sensors detect the light from each other and themselves, and the LED panels turn on and off in a slow feedback loop. The lights hang from half-inch threaded rod attached to the beams in the ceiling. The main cables are tied up casually to the threaded rod and plugged into the lighting track in the ceiling. On three separate I-beams in the ceiling are affixed three slabs of stone. The first stone we encounter is a pink granite, hanging around head height on the same beam we walk under as we enter the space, a foot or so away from the wall. This slab is around 4 feet by 3 feet and 10 inches thick. The bottom edge is rough and large parallel drill holes are visible where the original block broke away at the quarry. The largest surface that faces us is polished smooth, and the pink, black, and white crystals show a kind of diagonal movement or flow within the rock. This pink granite may be recognized from monuments and buildings around New York City. It is the base of the Statue of Liberty, the entrance to Grand Central Station, the exterior walls and pavers of Columbia University, among others. The stone has two brackets fixing the slab to the beam above it. The brackets are a half-inch thick steel bar that has been cold bent to 90 degrees. The brackets are connected on either side of the slab by 4 bolts. 2 bolts go through the holes drilled in the stone, and another 2 directly above, in between the top of the stone and the beam above. All 3 stones are held by identical brackets in varying dimensions. There are 2 other slabs of stone running perpendicular to the pink granite. There is a long gray granite piece, about 10 feet long by 1.5 feet tall and 6 inches thick. It runs parallel to the beam, and we can move underneath it easily. The sides and top of the stone are straight precision cuts, but the bottom that we move underneath is a rough, broken edge, curving slightly. The crystals on this stone are smaller, finer. The surface is not polished. This stone has been used in foundations for bridges and buildings in New York City, as well as in many monuments. A little deeper into the room, we find a green serpentine slab from Rochester, Vermont. This slab has an odd shape, an irregular trapezium with angular edges, of a similar size to the first pink granite slab. The dark green of the stone is punctured by quartz veins, crossing like lightning bolts, and flecks of gold-looking pyrite that sparkle. The stone appears throughout the city as a decorative surface, in subway stations, banks, post offices, as pedestals for bronze figures, and as 50-foot benches outside the Seagram Center in Manhattan. Hidden in shadows and often going unnoticed, above one wall there is a row of 11 spiny seed pods laid out on newspaper. Many of these seed pods have split open during the exhibition and small brown seeds spill out. These were collected from a plant which the artist planted in empty tree pits along the street earlier in the spring before the exhibition. The plant is called Datura Wrighti, commonly known as moonflower or sacred datura. It is shrub-like, with soft, velvety green leaves and white, trumpet-shaped flowers that bloom at night. Each flower is about the size of the palm of your hand, and the flower bud begins tightly spiraled in the afternoon, slowly unfurling along five rays of radial symmetry. The plants are native to the southwest USA and northern Mexico, so the mother plants are already dead or dying by the time the exhibition has opened. Annuals, like the Datura, live for only one growing season, producing hundreds or thousands of seeds capable of carrying on the next generation. The artist has collected some of these seeds, allowing other seed pods to remain on the plants and spread throughout the neighborhood. All parts of the plant contain narcotic alkaloids, which are poisonous in high doses. For some, the plant is sacred and is used medicinally and ceremonially. For others, the plant is considered dangerous and invasive.